welcome to Smack Off Eve. Nice to have you here. I am Jim Rome, broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices, every day, exactly 24 hours from the Smack Off itself. It is Smack Off Eve. What's going on? Nice to have you here. Welcome to the program. Busy, busy show on the eve of the Smack Off, so we're not going to talk Smack Off the entire day, but I'll get to it, obviously. Yesterday was a big day in the way of telephone calls. Golden tickets earned or ripped. Today is your last chance. If you want to call before the Smack Off itself, either because you're in it, or you want to be in it, or you want to say something about it, go ahead and do it right now. 1-800-636-8686. In fact, you should try and get through right now because I've got an interview coming up in 15 minutes. The head football coach at Hawaii, Nick Rolovich, joins me. That's in about 15 minutes. He's doing it early there. It's going to be 6:20 his time. Also, right after that, the head coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, Mike Riley. So we go back-to-back with the interviews. For that reason, I'll put you in the first segment, if there's something that's good enough. Otherwise, you got to wait till hour number two before you get through. Hit me on the phones. Hit me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. So those two interviews in hour number one, Nick Rolovich, Mike Riley. In the second hour, Andy Staples. Talk some college football with us. Third hour is open right now. You know how to get in. Smack Off Eve. Like, take this guy. Subject of his email. Smack Off stipulation. This really happened. Hilarious. Hey, Jim. Check this. Guy called to schedule the install for a new phone system in my office for tomorrow. Phone guy. How's tomorrow look for you? Me. As long as I'm not disturbed from 11 to 1 CST. Phone guy. Let me guess. Smack Off? Me. Hell yes. Phone guy, you're the second one I've tried to schedule with that same stipulation. Cue up the Baba O'Reilly. Do it, Alvy. Today, Alvy. Jeez. Way to go, Alvy. This guy wore his hashtag SmackOff 2017. Cheers, Chris and KC. If that really did happen, if that's a true story, that's awesome. This guy's tried to schedule two installs where somebody said, yeah, but not between the hours of 11 and 2. And he said, let me guess, Smack Off? Right, Smack Off. Once again, how are you listening? Where are you listening? Where are you watching? How are you watching? And something else I want to get into, who you got? Who you got? I'm usually not big on celebrities and athletes who tweet out, who you got? Except today I'm going to say, who you got? Smack Off Eve. All right, let me get you some baseball notes. I'm going to start right there because baseball had itself a night last night. Let me start in the district where Bryce Harper came up in a 2-2 game with runners on first and third in the bottom of the eighth. He took a first pitch ball. The next pitch was called a strike, which old Bryce did not care for at all.
There's the fastball.
See, that's the intensity of this at-bat coming out on a bad call. He is so locked in. He lives for these situations.
Then came the 1-2 pitch, and then came the chaos.
Swing and a miss on the fastball at 98, and Bryce Harper's been tossed. He slams down his bat, gets in Chris Siegel's face, and now he's going to further demonstrate where the strike zone is.
If he didn't drive that run in, he wasn't staying in this game. And he said that's twice, so there must have been a call earlier in the game that he didn't like down the zone.
Harper and home plate umpire Chris Siegel going at it, chest-to-chest jawing, serious adrenaline. Afterwards, Harper said he may need to change things up, starting with his music. Check this quote. I think I need to change my playlist because I get a little fired up. 5 a.m. really got me fired up by Logic. I called my brother and was like, man, I am so fired up to play today. I guess it got me a little too fired up. I guess I need to mix in some Temptations and some of those jazz bands to calm me down a little bit. End quote. You're all right, Bryce. Whatever works. But if you're going that route, you can't do the Temptations. You've got to speed right past that and then end up in smooth Jazzville, USA. I'm talking Kenny G. None of this adult contemporary or yacht rock. That's just playing with fire. Anything in the Easy Listing family will be your friend from now on, Bryce. In fact, if you're really serious about this, you'll skip right over the smooth jazz and the easy listening and go straight to Muzak. Just bump some elevator music in your headphones before games. That's the call. You'll be fine. But as weird as that ejection, and Harper's explanation was, it had nothing on Adrian Beltre getting run in Texas. Last night, the legend was trending on Twitter again. And normally, if he's trending, it's because he just went yard off one knee, or because Elvis Andrews is messing with him in the field, or rubbing his head in the dugout. Not this time, though. Beltre went 3 for 3 last night, 2 doubles and a bomb, bringing him to 2,996 career hits. But that wasn't the notable part of the night. Nope. That honor goes to the fact that he was ejected from the on-deck circle. Truly, one of the weirdest moments ever. Let's set the stage right here. Bottom of the eighth, Miami leads the Rangers 18-6. But Texas has the bases loaded. Beltre's on deck. Well, not close enough to on deck for second base umpire Jerry Davis, the second base ump. Davis walks towards Beltre, tells him to get back in the on-deck circle, and then I will let the announcers take it from here.
Well, what do we got going on here? What? Telling
Adrian to
get
Adrian to move out of the way.
Oh, no, Adrian. Oh, boy, he just been ejected.
Kicked him out of the game. Come on.
Wow.
That is one of the strangest things I've seen, and now Jeff Banister out. Well, now Banister's been ejected. Once he was told, move back to the batting circle or get in the batting circle, he said, okay, I'll just move it over here.
It's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Let me try and recap that and make some sense of the whole thing for you. So Beltre is taking a couple of warm-up hacks, but he was not in the on-deck circle. Jerry Davis told him to get into the on-deck circle. Yeah, because that's a super important thing in a 12-run beatdown. To make sure that guys are officially all in the on-deck circle. So Adrian then drags. He drags the on-deck circle a few feet to where he had been standing, and then he stood in the on-deck circle, and he continued to swing. And then he got ejected for that. And then manager Jeff Banister was ejected as well. Please, for the love of all that is holy, do not try and tell me that's part of the code. I know that umpires never want to be shown up, but how big a red ass is Jerry Davis if he's running that legend in a 12-run game for having a little bit of fun? And if you listen to Adrian, he's pretty clear that he wasn't showing up the ump. He wasn't trying to be funny. He was just standing in the same spot that he has stood in for most of his career, including earlier in the series when Davis was the home plate umpire. In other words, he doesn't know what the hell was going on, just like the rest of us.
Got robbed of a at-bat.
Yeah.
Having a good game. Does that make it a little bit more frustrating?
Yeah, obviously, it was no need for that. There was no need for him to call me out there. There's no need for him to throw me out, because I don't think I showed him off. I just did what he told me to do. He doesn't know what the outcome of the game could be. I mean, he was trying to come back, took one at-bat from me, so who knows what it could be. I don't think that was necessary. Maybe he was trying to do something different, or you know, be good. No, I don't know what the hell happened, but I mean, I don't understand what his problem was.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened. Neither do we, Adrian. I don't understand what his problem was either. But nobody anywhere should have any problem with Adrian Beltre last night. This guy's an absolute treasure. And if he wants to drag the on-deck circle all the way to the pitcher's mound for his warm-up, that's fine by me. Hey, but thank you, Jerry. Thank you very much, Jerry. Glad that you're out there looking out for all of us. Now, get back to righting the rest of the wrongs in the world. You know, like those jerks who slide into a parking spot with time left on the meter that they didn't pay for. Go take care of that. Or the guys who fill out the survey card at TGI Fridays after their French onion soup comes out too cold. Or complaining about puppies and kids laughing too loud. Or tonight, whenever you step between the lines next time, whenever that is, with that badge on your chest and the game of baseball's integrity on the line, you do whatever you can to protect that on-deck circle. You protect that on-deck circle, Jerry, like your life depends on it. What a red ass. Leave this guy alone. Adrian, I mean, I want to talk about that Cavs press conference. Did you see that yesterday? And Dan Gilbert, just digging and digging a bigger hole for himself. We'll get there. Speaking of pressers, did you check out Daniel Cormier and John Jones? Man, these guys literally hate each other. Literally hate each other. Like, take DC. You heard him on the show earlier this week. And even if you didn't, you probably know Daniel Cormier is just one of the good dudes. Not even one of the good dudes in MMA or not even one of the good dudes in sports. One of the good dudes in life. This is a great, great dude. But the second he gets around John Jones, the F-bombs start flying. The threats come out. He accuses him of roiding, being a crackhead. I mean, it was amazing. These guys hate each other's guts. Not manufactured hate to try to sell a pay-per-view or two. They hate each other. And we saw it again yesterday. Clones have been on me to talk about Julio Jones and him losing some jewelry and being in a lake when it went down and then throwing down for a dive crew to go after his bling. Hell yes. It was a buck and a half. $150,000 earring. You better believe he sent people in to find it. I've got no problem with it. Smack off Eve. We are now less than 24 hours out. Where are you listening? How are you listening? Where are you watching? Who you got? Got a Hugh Freeze update for you, too. All of that, but first things first, head coach of the Hawaii Warriors, Nick Rolovich, joins me when we come back. Nebraska head coach Mike Riley right after that. Think about how much time we spend in the summer or in the sun over the summer.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back, Jim Rome with you. Quick reminder, the legendary Guns N' Roses are back with more arena dates on their Not In This Lifetime tour. It features Axl, Slash, and Duff playing all their hits. See the most amazing live event in rock. Get tickets right now at LiveNation.com. That's LiveNation.com. Talking college football right now, we are joined by the head football coach at the University of Hawaii. He is entering his second season at Hawaii. He led them to a bowl win last season. Hawaii was 7-7 last year. They open up their season at UMass on August 26th. We are joined by Hawaii head coach Nick Rolovich. Nick, good morning. Good to have you on. How are you?
Honored to be on. You kidding me? It's wonderful.
Nick, it is great to have you on. Really nice to talk to you. All right, so you caused quite the scene at the Mountain West Media Summit because you traveled around with an Elvis impersonator. But before we get into that, the original idea, Nick, was for you to attend the events with a monkey on your shoulder. Where did that idea come from?
I don't know where that came from. I like Mike Leach a lot, and I like talking to him. I think he's creative, and he makes a lot of noise, and I thought a monkey would be cool to show up with, but Elvis was a hit. No, that was much better for Vegas, I think.
Yeah, I think it would have worked, though. I think it would have been great. But a school spokesperson told Yahoo, quote, there were too many hurdles to jump to have that monkey show up. I mean, what are we talking about here? Was it financial?
Well, we're talking about wildlife permits. You know, where do you go to get those? You got to clear it with the Cosmo. And there was a little bit too much work to get it done.
All right, so you fell back on the Elvis impersonator. What was involved in selecting the right Elvis, and then how was it to roll with him?
Well, there's obviously plenty of options in Vegas, and I just contacted a talent company, and they said, hey, we got the guy that you need for this idea. And I just told them, hey, come hang out for 2 hours. You want to talk to the commissioner? Talk to the commissioner, sing with media, whatever you want to do. And just to liven it up, because that thing could get kind of stale for 8 hours.
Man, that is so true. Nick Rolovich joining us. I mean, you want to liven that thing up. In fact, one of your players, Jelani Tavai, said that you do stuff like that on a daily basis, that bringing Elvis along was kind of normal for you, but he feels like the good thing about it is it keeps the players engaged and it helps prevent guys from getting bored by routine. Is that pretty much the goal that you have in mind, to keep guys focused and not get bored?
Yeah, and to make this thing fun. I'll tell you what, you know, I've had a lot of ideas for a long time. Just now I'm in the seat where a lot of people can't tell me no. So,
okay. I like it. The buck stops right there. Listen, now if you go back a little further, you were a quarterback at Marin Catholic here in California, and then you went to City College in San Francisco, and then you went to Hawaii to play. What was it about Hawaii that made you choose to play there?
Well, a lot of it had to do with Coach June Jones. You know, I appreciated his honesty. He didn't try to sell me any goods. He said, this is what we're going to do on offense. This is what Hawaii is all about. And I like the guy. And I said, that's the kind of guy I want to play for. You know, don't try to, and we try to do that with our recruits. I'm not trying to trick you to come to Hawaii. If you're going to come to Hawaii and I got to trick you, this is a horrible place to be miserable. So
you don't have to trick anybody to get them to Hawaii. And you're right. If they're not happy there, they're not going to be happy anywhere. Now, you had one of the all-time legendary games in college football history when you passed for 543 yards and 8 touchdowns in a 72-45 win over BYU. Those are video game numbers. What do you remember most about that game?
It was such a process, and it just everybody on the team, receivers, coaches, that was just that moment where everything kind of came together, and we took advantage of every opportunity, and an incredible rivalry for the University of Hawaii, and it was really the love between all the players on the team. You got to play for one another. You can't play for those numbers. Don't happen if you're trying to do it. You know, that just happens because you're trying to play the best you can with the guys you love.
Nick Rolovich, head football coach at Hawaii, joining us on the practice field, in fact, about ready to get some work in.
Yeah. Rome, you're open training camp, man.
I love that, man. So, Nick, how you feeling? I mean, I can tell you're fired up, but you're about 10 minutes away from opening training camp. You're the head coach entering your second season. What's going through your mind right now, 10 minutes out?
Well, I'm on with Jim Rome and the Clones, and we're about to open training camp. I couldn't have scripted this one.
My man. Now, you played in NFL Europe and the Arena League, and then you turned to coaching full-time. You were the quarterback's coach at Hawaii, then the offensive coordinator, and then you went to Nevada. So when the opportunity came up for you to return as head coach, what was your first reaction?
Oh, I owe it to Hawaii. You see, when I got here, I didn't make all the right choices. And the 2001 numbers are good, but the 2000 numbers, those look real bad, and that's part of my fault. I was not focused. I thought I was coming on a 2-year spring break trip, and that's what our record represented after that season. So I kind of was able to turn around and get a second chance and didn't want to mess up that second opportunity. Because what happens is you're a senior. All you know is football. What the heck am I going to do next? You know, I wanted to at least give it everything I had that last year, and I was lucky enough to get that opportunity. And I shared with all these kids that story. This is going to go fast, man. And you got such an opportunity to do something special. Don't waste it.
Hey, Nick, does it resonate with them? I mean, you know how you were when you were their age. I mean, what you know now is obviously something very different. But when you tell them that, do they get it? Does it resonate with them?
Yeah, because I think I'm pretty honest. I'm not a real good liar. I tell them a lot of the stuff and the experiences I had and how it affected me. You know, I'm not going to pretend like I was some angel. And we were all kids one day. But, you know, these are kids now that have everyone's a paparazzi with their phones. They got to be extra careful. I don't know what would happen if I had Snapchat when I was a kid.
What do you think would have happened back then? What if you had Snapchat? What if you had the Gram? What if you had Twitter? How do you think that would have gone?
I probably wouldn't be standing here on this hill waiting for training camp to start at the University of Hawaii, probably.
You know, you had a decision to make, actually. So, I mean, you've got this perspective. You want to come back. You want to get another shot. And then you get it. But the program that you came to had gone 10-36 in the previous 4 years, had not been to a bowl game since 2010. So what was your sense of the state of the program when you came back?
Well, see, being in Nevada, we played them every year. And I knew there was some talent on the team, you know, but it was really about pulling the team together. So, for instance, there was the locker room. You know, the guys had picked their own lockers, so there was all these cliques, right? There's black guys over here, the white guys over here, the Samoans over here, the local boys from Hawaii in this corner. And I walk in, I go, so we blew that thing up and went black, white, local, Australian, Samoan, Tongan, and just made everyone kind of, not by position, just we are who we are, but we all got to be one at the end of the day.
And Nick, you know how it goes, right? Winning's a habit, but losing becomes a habit, and then all of a sudden gets into your head, and then you develop that mentality. I mean, did you sense some of that, and did you have to change that culture, root that out? Did guys get used to losing?
Yeah. They had been called losers. Classroom, field. So we started with just giving them socks, you know? New socks if we had competitions in the winter. Just to teach them how to win. Kind of like what Tom Herman did. You know, is doing down in Texas when I hear him talk. You know, you got to teach kids how to win.
It pays to be a winner.
You know what I mean, they can't be afraid to be great. If you're afraid to be great, you're done for.
You know, you guys had a big first year. So what did it mean to you to not only reach a bowl game in that first year, but to end that season with a win in the Hawaii Bowl?
It was huge for our fans and the seniors. I mean, this is, you know, we win six games, we're going to the Hawaii Bowl every year. I mean, that's just what it is. But the seniors on that football team last year, not one player on the football team had ever had a bowl experience. And so you had to coach them through everything. Guys, we're going to be down in Waikiki for a week. You know, this is what's going to happen. You know, I want you guys to enjoy it, but we're here to win the game. We didn't talk about going to a bowl game ever. We always talked about winning the bowl game because this was their only opportunity to be called a champion, and we wanted to take advantage of it.
Hey, Nick, before I turn you loose, and I know you got camp starting, you mentioned Waikiki. It's been a few years since I went, but when I think about Waikiki, I mean, it's a major city now. It's a major city, yeah. And it's a great city, but like any other city, if you want to find trouble, it's not that hard to find it. What was your message to your guys in Waikiki, and how'd they deal with that week?
Well, this is another one. I talked to Coach Jones. He said, you know, first night, I'm worried, right? What's the curfew? What's the schedule? But Coach Jones said, listen, give them one night, no curfew. If they all show up to practice, you know you got the right guys ready to play this game. And we practice early in the morning. You know, it's 6:30 here. So, you know, everyone was on the bus or got to practice. They came on a mission. So that was some pretty good advice from Coach Jones.
Nick Rolovich, the head football coach at Hawaii. I'll tell you what, Nick, I can't believe that you're starting your first day of camp by coming on this show. But I appreciate you for doing it. Great to have you on, Nick.
I'm honored. Tell the clones hello.
Hey, clones, coach says hello. Great job, Nick. Really good to talk to you. Let's do it again soon. Have a great day, Nick. Go dominate your day, and we'll have you back on soon. Tell the clones hello. That's a great statement from a coach right before opening up camp. Tell the clones hello. Mark Sanchez was always great about that. Hey, clones, what's up? When Mark Sanchez would come on the show back in the day, I'd always lay out the way that I do, right? With the intro, with the bio, with the resume. Mark Sanchez joining us. Hey, Rome. Hey, clones. What's up? I'm joined by Mark Sanchez. Mark, nice to have you back. How are you?
Rome, I'm good, man. Thanks for having me. What's up, clones?
Alvy, good work. I mean, obviously, Alvy and I did not work that up because I didn't know that Nick Rolovich would end the interview by saying, say hello to the clones. All right, Alvy, you've redeemed yourself. You have redeemed yourself. At Laird City 34 tweets, this coach is awesome. Hashtag rack him. At Vinny Hardy tweets, this dude, Nick Rolovich, is killing it. At the crack of dawn, Hawaii time. Strong interview. The legend at Cruz Pedregon is in. Happy smack off Eve. Who is coming for the title? 5,000 GER, and I'm throwing two VIP NHR tickets to the winner. I'm ready. All right, that package just got sweeter. Not only NHRA tickets, VIP NHRA tickets. $5,000. Notice Cruz is not saying, you know, a tour of the facility for second place. There is nothing for second. It's a kick in the ass. Rob in the 210 tweets, Romy, please gloss Coach Rolovich, Coach Clone. What an epic interview with a clone who happens to be a head coach. Hashtag jungle karma.
Tell the clones hello.
You got it, Nick. He was a revelation. My man was so good. Right before the opening of camp, he was on the field doing his jungle hit. My man just punched his ticket to a playoff and another bowl win. When we come back, Nebraska head coach Mike Riley. It is smack off Eve. Where are you, clones? What are you doing the day before the day? Let me get you
live from Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Great to be with you on this Thursday. I am Jim Rome in Southern California. We're going back to back with college football interviews. First, we had Hawaii head coach Nick Rolovich right before he opened up camp. We are now joined by the head football coach at Nebraska. He is entering his third season at Nebraska. The Huskers went 9-4 last season. They were 6-3 in the Big Ten. They open up against Arkansas State on September 2nd, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Cornhusker head coach Mike Riley is my guest. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you, Mike?
Great, Jim. It's great to talk to you. It's been a while.
Mike, it is great to talk to you. It always has been, and it's nice to have you back. Now, you handled your business at Big Ten Media Days. Fall camp starts in a few days. When it gets to this point of the year, how eager are you just to get things started?
That's a great question for me, Jim, because I've been doing it a long time, and I love it. I'm really excited about our team and fired up for camp. I think I'm a little bit like a fan. I have an interest in this team. There's a lot of moving parts, but it's been a good off season, and I think it's been a good progression with the program here and kind of getting into the whole Nebraska scene, and I'm enjoying it.
Mike Riley joining us. You know, Mike, there's so many interesting things in that response that I want to talk to you about. But let me first ask you, when you're coming off a 9-win season and you're entering your third year in charge, do you feel like you're now at a place where you have developed the culture that you want in that program? Or maybe in some ways, do you never, ever reach that place where you stop developing that culture?
Oh, boy, I really believe after doing it a few times, Jim, that it's an ongoing thing. I think it's a 3-5 year initial process of This is the way we expect it to look. You know, I've been there before where I've said I don't like how this feels or how this looks, and I think it is a process. I also think it's the football process, too. You know, what we want to establish is what we're good at, who we are, kind of identity type stuff. That's really been fun and interesting for me because we've had, and now we're having a big quarterback transition from, you know, from first of all, from our history at Oregon State with our quarterbacks to a whole different skill set with Tommy Armstrong, and now kind of back to the same kind of skill set we had when I was on the West Coast.
Nebraska head coach Mike Riley joins us. All right, so in terms of quarterback, you've got Tanner Lee taking over now. He comes in with a lot of buzz around him. What do you make of the way, Mike, that he's handled the attention that comes along with being the quarterback at Nebraska?
Beautiful thing about Tanner, Jim, is there's not a lot of drama there. He came in kind of as a guy that was initially really well liked by everybody. He had to sit out the year because of the transfer, and then pretty soon I noticed there was just a lot of respect there too. So he was well liked. He's well respected. Not a lot of drama. Pretty mature, poised kid. I really like him. He reminds me of the transfer situation we had years ago with Matt Moore coming from UCLA to Oregon State. Matt kind of entered in as one of the guys and had a great 2-year career with us, and I'm looking forward to seeing if Tanner can do the same kind of thing at Nebraska.
You know, one more thing about Tanner is he had been the starter at Tulane before he transferred, and he ran the scout team last year. It's not something that a lot of guys would necessarily like to do. What did he show you with the way he approached that job?
That told me a lot about him. He did that, again, without a lot of drama. He told me he just wanted to do the very best job he could do for our defense. What you said is really a really interesting part, because a guy that's already been a 2-year starter in college football program, to sit out, hard to do, I would think. And I thought that he handled it about as well as he could have and got himself ready for the off season and for spring ball. And we had a lot of fun with him in spring. So I think he's handled all that really, really well, really helped our team, really became one of the guys and was elected an off-season captain for our off-season workout program. Did a lot of stuff like that that's pretty impressive.
We're talking Nebraska football with head coach Mike Riley. And, Mike, also you brought in Bob Diaco is your defensive coordinator. He is one of my favorite interviews in college football because of his enthusiasm and his intensity. What's it been like to work with him so far?
Gosh, really fun. And what you said about him has been really confirmed here for me, Jim. He is smart. He is detailed. He's a very, very good teacher. I was impressed with the amount of production we got accomplished throughout spring ball, you know, the number of things that we got in, because we changed to the 3-4. I've been intrigued with doing that for a few years, excited to do that. Great marriage with that thought and getting to hire Bob. he's always thought-provoking for me. He's been now a head coach, so a guy like that on the staff is really good for me. I enjoy talking to him about football programs as well as just the defense that we're implementing here.
You know, Mike, you are relentlessly upbeat. You always have been, and I could tell from the very top of the interview that you are fired up. Always fired up, but it seems like there's a little something extra, maybe, unless I'm reading that wrong, except that the one thing that keeps coming up, everybody around the program is talking about the fire, the motivation you have this year, even more so than normal. My question then is, how do you go about maintaining that drive and that passion for what you do when you've done it as long as you've done it?
I think my age has brought on more of an appreciation for what I do, Jim. I really do appreciate this job. And, you know, there's a lot of layers to it, but when you get down to it, you know, the coaching of football and the work, the working with young men is really something that is a valuable thing to get to do. And I'm really fortunate to do it. And I think getting to continue to do that is really special to me. So I am fired up about it, and I still enjoy all the parts. When I don't, I won't coach anymore, but I'm enjoying every bit of it, looking forward to the start of another football season.
We're talking to Mike Riley. We'll do so for a few more moments. You know, Mike, very sadly, earlier this month, safeties coach Bob Elliott passed away due to complications from cancer. He was truly beloved in the coaching community by his players over the course of a career at schools like Iowa, Notre Dame, Nebraska. Yeah. I know you only worked with him for a short time, but what kind of a person was he?
Man, you know, through the association with Bob Diaco, I got the name Bob Elliott. And, of course, I knew who Bob Elliott was. And then, you know, I had many people call me about him, but I really didn't need that. And I'm really glad that we hired Bob Elliott. And I really will miss him because I enjoyed him a ton. The football part of it, his experience in football, his relationship with players was awesome. He loved the players, and the players loved him. And on just a whole other note, besides all that, I think we would have been great friends. I just really liked the guy, and I'm really, really sorry. I'm really thankful that we got to be around him, his wife Joey. I mean, just great people.
You know, something, the part about you guys would have been really great friends, safety Aaron Williams talked about the impact that Elliott had on him and how the two of them connected. I mean, I know there was a moment when you saw the two of them having lunch one time. It seemed like they were old friends, didn't it?
Yeah, it really did. It was really a neat picture. And I saw that with Bob right away. He really tried to make that connection. He enjoyed it. I think those things I described about me and my experience in this job and what I now most appreciate, I just saw that come to life with him. And as a position coach, when you can get close to those guys like that, he made an immediate impact. And to go down the dining hall and see that picture, and that was not the only time, but I just remember that day with Aaron. I thought that was pretty special.
Mike Riley, my guest. You know, Mike, last July, Sam Foltz died in a car accident, and we're talking about Bob Elliott, who passed away. And the fact is, I mean, you're a leader of men, a leader of young men, but there's no manual, there's no playbook for dealing with something like this. So as the head coach and the leader of a program of more than 100 players and an entire staff, how do you go about helping them with the grieving process?
Oh, boy, you're right about no manual now. I mean, that hit me right between the eyes again this year of back-to-back years losing somebody in the program. And it is hard. And the one thing I note is that I can't say anything. I tell them that. I can't say anything to make you feel better about this. But we together can give each other some support and strength. And we together can understand what this person has meant to us. And so we were fortunate to be around these folks, but it was unfortunate in such a short time.
You know, Mike, a final thought. I'm a Los Angeles native, and when I first got into the business, I had not really spent much time out of California, and then we built this network out, and we were adding stations nationally. I will never forget the time, early 1990s, when I went to Omaha, and I went to Nebraska, and I just had never seen anything like it, never seen people quite like that, just the warmest, most genuine people. You've coached at the very highest levels of professional football, college football. You've seen a lot of things, done a lot of things.
Yeah.
But as you enter your third year, what do you know now about Nebraska, the program and the fans, than maybe you didn't know before you arrived?
You know, I really appreciate that, those thoughts, because I really feel, I want to feel like a real good fit here, because I really like these people. They they care so much. And people ask me to describe Nebraska in one word, and I say care, you know, and it's all over the place. And they're genuinely nice, friendly. They pride themselves in what they say they are the best fans in college football. I think they are. They love their team. They've stayed with it through thick and thin and sold out that stadium for 60-plus years. And it's really an honor to be in a football program where people are around you that care so much.
He is the head football coach in Nebraska, entering his third season, coming off a very good 9-4 year last year, including 6-3 in the Big Ten. Mike, I appreciate you, and I appreciate the relationship and all the interviews we've done over the years. It is so good to have you back, Mike. Thank you very much.
I'll pass that back to you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You know, I've said it before, when Mike Riley comes on, I'm not sure there's a nicer head coach in any sport than Mike Riley. And don't confuse that with him lacking in fire, drive, intensity. He's got all those things, which make him a great coach. But I'm just saying, as a guy who's in a cutthroat business, in a cutthroat world, that's probably the nicest man there's ever been as a head coach. And I've said that before when he comes on. He is genuinely that good of a person, that nice of a guy. And sometimes you see that and say, yeah, nobody's that nice. Especially in that business, you can't be that nice. Not if you want to be successful. So, you know, that's the guy who turns it on when the red light goes on. And I'm going to say, no, I've talked to him so many times over the years, and he always shows up like that, no matter what's going on. He did in the NFL. He does in the college ranks. That is a really, really good guy. And I'm going to say it again, the nicest head coach in any sport that I think I've ever spoken to. Cornhusker fans, do you think you finally have the guy you've been looking for? I love that answer to that last question. He said, I just want to be the right fit. I just hope that I'm that guy. I want to fit. I want this to be the right fit so badly because I have such an appreciation for the opportunity, for the history of the program, for the job, for these people. You know, and how many coaches say that we have the best fans? Every coach says that. Of course they do, because either they think so or they have to say it. It's hard for me to say that any group of fans is the best group or the best set of fans, but I could say this. I don't think there's a better group of fans than Nebraska fans. And I learned that early on. When we first syndicated the program and we showed up in Omaha for the first time, I was blown away by their knowledge of the team, the history of the team, their knowledge of the depth chart. I mean, literally, that everybody who would call the show from Omaha knew, like, the four deep. They knew everything about the team. And my favorite thing about Omaha, there was such a nasty hazing process for the new affiliates when we first started. Because understand, I did not start this thing with a mature network roster. We would add affiliates. It was a grassroots program. We would add them 1, 2, 3, 4 at a time. So you can imagine when I started in Los Angeles or in San Diego, then Los Angeles, when we added Omaha, Nebraska, California natives were killing Omaha, killing them. And Omaha stood in and just started firing back haymakers. It was one of my favorite times in the history of the program. And I thought, I love these people. I mean, they were just standing in and trading and knocking suckers out. Like, Omaha picked up the jungle so quickly. It was tremendous. All right, we go to hour number two, and we are wide open on Smack Off Eve. Two great college football interviews to start the day. We're coming right back. This is CBS Sports Radio.